When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi guys, welcome back to the podcast. Just before we start this episode, I'm just asking a little favour. I really appreciate the hours some of you are investing into the channel, simply watching the videos. But to help the channel grow, what I would love for you to do is hit the subscribe button if you enjoy the channel. And if there's any particular podcast you enjoy, please hit the thumbs up for like button. It'll do massive things for the channel if we can do that. And thank you very much for your continued support and feedback. Hi guys, welcome to our latest edition of the podcast, and it gives me a great pleasure to introduce a guy that I've been desperate to get on the podcast for a while. He's a busy man. It's a pleasure and very proud to have him here. Ladies and gentlemen, Derek Ferguson. How are you, Derek?
I'm magic. You're saying a busy man. I think my missus wants me busier. And my boys, they want me to get a real job. I'm not interested in a real job now. To be fair, I've not really had a real job. I don't know. Because football's not a real job, according to a lot of people.
Aye, you know what I mean? It's a great job.
I never called it a job. There you go. I always thought, man, it's a privilege, you know, because you keep yourself fit, play football, something we all love doing. So, I've never had a real job, and I don't intend to get a real job, to be honest with you. So if my missus comes in and watches this podcast, I ain't getting a real job in. Sorry.
That's a brave way of doing it, isn't it? Could you not just tell it in
your
face?
No, you kidding me on. Oh no, don't mess with the missus.
So your story, Derek, kid, Lanarkshire boy, just to go through chronological order, tell us about you know, where you were brought up, what that looked like, and then, you know, your first bits into grassroots football.
Well, actually, I'm for the East End of Glasgow, born in Bailison, brought up in Shittleson. Githamlock, then Ballanert. I stayed with my granny, to be honest with you, Craig, for most part. My mum and dad were working really hard to better themselves. So I was there. I went to Ballanert Primary School up to, I think, about the age of 9, 10 before there was a kind of overspill. The kind of Glasgow people moved out to kind of Hamilton. So I went to stay in Little Lanark in Hamilton. But I have got good memories, even though I was that young. I had great memories of, you know, growing up, being brought up with my granny. I love my granny Fergie, a woman that you wouldn't mess with. 110 Ballanert Road. It was right on the old Edinburgh Road. Used to watch the... when we were playing football out in the streets, as everybody did, every now and again we had to stop because the Barry L and the Toy, the gangs, would be battling across the old Edinburgh Road. So we used to go up in the verandas. Stone and watch or the crackpots, knocking lumps out of each other, and then once they'd finished we'd go back down and play football at 10 o'clock at night before your granny would, well, my granny Fergie would shout me up upstairs, need to get to bed, school in the morning. So I loved my upbringing, so I did.
And when did you move out to Hamilton?
As I say, about 9 or 10. I moved out there, Little Lanark, it was primary 6 or primary 7, Neilsland Primary. It's a wee bit different when you go out there. You need to make new pals and that, which is, it's easy when you've got the love of football, don't you? So, I moved out there, and as I says, my man Da, we moved out, we didn't just move to Lernham, we moved out to Bells Hill as well. We moved a couple of places in Hamilton, but it was a case, it was my man Da, I mean, they used to work their socks off, and it was just because they wanted to try and better themselves, get a better house and all that. So it kind of rubbed off in me, and probably with Barry a little bit, that I mean, I know we're in a kind of privileged position. You've still got to work your backside off for certain things. So, even going back to Glasgow, because I tell my boys, I mean, I used to get a pair of wee kind of plimsoll things. They wear them in the gyms and the schools these days. I used to go to the Pakistani shop and get them. And it would last you a week, but they cost a pound, I think, at that time. But they only lasted like 2 or 3 days, and then you were putting cardboard in them. And my boys don't believe that. But that's the way we used to run about, because you were always out in the street playing football. Different in this day and age, isn't it? You know, you don't see that.
No, you don't. And see your football, everybody played for the minute they walked out the door. But when did you start playing organised football? Was that when you were still in Glasgow, or was that once you got to Hamilton?
Aye, Blue Star, who were up in Easterhouse, used to play for them. I think that was about a year or two before I moved out to Hamilton. I moved out there, it was Burnbank Boys Club, before I made the wee move to Gart Cosh. Maybe tell you a wee bit about that later on, because that was because at that time Celtic Boys Club were dominating football, and there was a guy called I can't remember him, Mr. Skinner we used to call him, but he took some of the better players for some of the teams, put them all together to challenge Celtic.
Gart Cosh is the it was fun, boys playing for
them,
wasn't it, at the time?
Aye. I mean, I saw a wee bit of the show with Dave and Shuggy, you know, and they're talking about the S-Form. I think the S-Form was a great thing. I always thought the kind of the academies that they have in this day and age, I know you take today with a lot of stuff and that, but I just think the S-Form was a better, it gave you a better opportunity, because you signed that contract for 12, and that took you through to 16. And a lot happens, as you know, with youngsters, even the growth spurts, and sometimes our things are no great at home. And so all these things you've got to take into account. I just think it gives you a better opportunity over that 4 years. I hate to see the boys get took in for like 6 months, a year, and then they're told they're no good enough. Now, one of the hardest things to receive in football is rejection. You know, it's hard, even as an adult, you know, when you're get told, you're not good enough, you don't fit in here. I mean, it kills you. So what does that do to youngsters? So it affects them. So that's why I think the S-Form was a better way of going about it. And they kind of roughly had an idea, I think, when you got to the age of 14, 15, whether they were going to keep you on or whether they were going to let you go. But I think it was done in a better way. I just hate to see them, Craig, just getting in for 6 months and then told that you're not good enough.
Yeah. On I think it was the shoe one, I was talking about a conversation I had with Walter Smith not long before he took ill. And he was telling me, when you sign a pro youth player at 10-year-old, where you can sign for a club, a wee bit of break in the season at the end of the season, you're actually only signing them and committing to them for 10 months. Whereas if you're 22, you've got to commit to you for 3, 4, maybe 5 years at times.
Mm-hmm.
And if clubs had that they had to commit that length of time, there might be more work put in before they just pull kids in and send them out. But the S-Form sign was, I was a kid.
It was brilliant. I mean, my coaches were Tam Forsyth, John Gregg, Tommy McLean, Alec Miller. So that was a couple of times a week. Urin Albion, which is a car park now. That was your coaches. So, but it wasn't just the football side there. Installed other things into you, discipline, which is massive. They get you off the street. So football's a great thing as well. And you see other guys talk about the boxing as well. You get the guys off the street, because if we weren't playing football, if we weren't, and this is organised football, what would we all be up to? We'd be up to probably no good. So that's how there's no enough money invested in youth football.
No, I agree with you. And Charlie and I talk a lot about it.
Charlie Miller does a brilliant, by the way, job.
And I think that I think we agree, and a lot of your thoughts are similar with grassroots football. Mm-hmm. And it's our job at grassroots to put as many players as possible into the pot, and then the better ones will come out and go to pro youth. And that's mm-hmm. fine. There's a hierarchy system here. I totally understand that. But my fear is that the ones that are getting into the pot at the top, mm-hmm. into our grassroots, are predominantly middle class and above. And the reason for that is we need to charge our kids to coach them. Mm-hmm. We're all volunteers, but we need to provide.
You do all your fundraisers.
I think we're about $4,000-$5,000 a month. Wow. That's just for parts to train on. That's before you take in the 11-a-side ones needing parts on a Saturday, mm-hmm. paying for refs, paying for X, Y, and Z, your league fees and all that. It's about $4,000 or $5,000 the last time I sat doing your treasurer now. We need to get that money back in somehow, mm-hmm. and we need to charge fees. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of parents, a lot of commitment getting the kids back and forth to their training.
Unbelievable.
They want the ones, they want the new boots, they want the latest shinies, they want the mm-hmm. whatever. This new thing where they cut their socks and, oh, I don't want feet in their socks, drives me insane, mate. So it's an expensive sport. So I'm not convinced we're getting, so you take a Davy Cooper, a Jimmy Johnson, a Jimmy Henderson, mm-hmm. Willie Henderson, Willie Johnson. See, these players, mm-hmm. they might still be there today. But see, if they're no middle class or above, we might never see them. So we're not getting a chance to see them development a wee bit as mm-hmm. much as we can as volunteers to then pass them on to pro clubs. And football to me is not, the working class isn't there as much as it used to be.
It's more than fair comment because, I mean, I've ran my boys about here, there and everywhere, and I was lucky enough to be able to do that because I had a car, because, it's not a job that I had, you know, because I was finished at lunchtime, you know, and I was able to do that. Not everybody's able to do that. Yeah. Do you want to know what I think should happen? And I think, I don't know if it's been put out there before. See players that, in the game the day, I think there should even be like a percent or half a percent of their wages, and it's put back into the grassroots football. Because without grassroots football, without guys like yourself and all these guys up and down the country that get not the only thing, well, I would imagine what you get out of it is the pleasure of seeing somebody going on and you know, and maybe so that's your kick, but you should be rewarded. You shouldn't be having to fork out that $4,000-$5,000, there should be a pot of money there that you should be able to get into that and take that out to keep your club alive. And that comes for, and I wouldn't have minded that. See if somebody comes to us, comes into the club and says, by the way, there's going to be 1% of your wage and we're going to put it back into grass football. Would you accept that? Without a shadow of doubt. Because without the guys at Blue Star, at Burnbank Boys Club, at Gartcross United, who I played for, I wouldn't have got the opportunity to play football. Simple as, isn't it?
Aye. And with modern football, I mean, your guy that's playing for Dumbarton, maybe not so much, but see your guy playing for Rangers even, and the 20th, 25th person in the squad, they're making fortunes. Mm-hmm. 1% would make no big difference to them, but a massive difference. But anyways, so do you want to set up a direct debit then?
do you know something? But do you not think that's a good idea?
I think it's a great idea. It's very clever and simple.
You make a good, like you're saying the guy at Dumbarton, who, right, just say for sake, earns £100, right? So a percent of that. And then you've got a guy that earns £100,000, you know, and then you get a percent of that, you know, and you add that up. It should be, because the players should think about that, the unions and whoever it is. I don't know. I'm not clever enough, but it's just something that I think should happen. That if I was approached with somebody that says, would you give me half a percent, 1%, or 2% of your wages, and put it into this pot for grassroots football so that they don't need to worry about paying for a park. They don't need to worry about getting a bag of balls, getting new strips and all that. Because we're always in the supermarkets and you see the bucket and they're, you know, and they have to date the parents. You know, even like you're just saying, and it can be middle class, but what about the person that hasn't got a car? You know, then could we get them out there in a taxi or something, or organise something? Could we have a bus? There's loads of stuff out there, but so what we've got out, and I've had an okay living out of football, but without all these coaches and all that, I wouldn't be here. So would I have put something into it? Of course I would. Right. I was a shadow of a doubt.
Oh, fair play. So you did you go to Gartcross before your involvement with Rangers, or was it the Rangers S form that
I was at Rangers as an S form. That was for Burnbank Boys Club I was playing. So, but you were allowed to play obviously with your school team at that time in Gardcosh. So I went to Gardcosh, I was under 13s. We'd won the Scottish Cup with Burnbank Boys Club down at Kilmarnock. And then, as I says, Mr. Skinner had this idea that he wanted to challenge Celtic because they were dominating everything, and he was taking two or three of the better players, well, so-called better players, you know, and put them into a team to challenge Celtic. So I was at Rangers, aye.
It was Burnbank that you were playing for when the S-form thing came about then?
Mm-hmm. Aye.
And what was that like, getting that news? How did that come about? You know, who did a scout come and see you, or what was the story?
It's just the usual, you know, you get asked in trial. So you go in, of course you're a wee bit kind of apprehensive, but that just disappeared for me. As soon as I walked in the doors, and remember, it wasn't a training ground. We went to Ibrox, you know, which is an absolute buzz. But I'd been a few places. I'd actually been there training with Celtic as well. And that's the big difference that I can remember away. But I remember going into the Celtic dressing room, and that was at Parkhead. And I remember going in there, and you could see everybody, all the boys were quite nervous, and, you know, we could have to go out and train. We didn't know each other. When I went into Ibrox, it was a totally different atmosphere. It's hard to describe. It just felt more relaxed. There was a wee bit more carry on, which maybe has played a big part of my career as well. But I don't know. And obviously being a Rangers supporter, just right away I felt at ease. I felt at home. And then within the first couple of training sessions, they had contacted my old man. Did they want to sign? Well, daft question, isn't it? You know, so, and the rest is kind of history.
So you sign your S form, then get sort of fanned out to Gardcosh to this. Mm-hmm. And there were a few S form players. Was there any other boys for Rangers in at Gardcosh at the time?
To be honest, no, there wasn't.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm trying to think. There is one guy, Big Blondie guy. I'm trying to remember his name, by the way. I've had too many smacks in the back of the napper. So I've... his name will come to me. It was only me and him that was in. That's terrible, isn't it? I can't remember his name.
We'll come back to but there
was a lot of the other boys were kind of other clubs, you know, yeah. St. Mirren. I think it was one or two attached to Celtic. But as I say, it was a kind of, for a season, it was only for about a season that we were all brought together, because I was took out of Gardcosh with Rangers. Rangers put me in the reserves, which I don't know. See, in hindsight, I don't know if it was a good thing or a bad thing. The reason I was took out of playing with Gardcosh was I was getting into bad habits. And the bad habits was I was dribbling with the ball, beating people and scoring goals. I know, they scratch their head and go, ah, he used to score goals and beat people and all that.
I took men on.
I know. And because they wanted to kind of, they thought I was finding it too easy. You know, so I go in with obviously the reserves.
So, last time you couldn't be
15.
And you're 15. Playing at reserve football.
So I'm not physically developed either.
Yeah.
Mentally as well. You know, you see physically, but mentally up there. So the next thing, I'm in the reserves. These guys are first team players coming back from injury. Yeah. So these other guys are desperate to become Rangers first team players, and I'm through in the mix. So it was tough, let's just say that. So I had to grow up pretty quick. So I did in that environment, because that's totally different if you're going for the boys' football, into that environment where you're playing with men, you know.
That's a tough gig. And the guys you're playing against are not going to be any mugs. You know, you're playing against some seasoned pros. And again, you know, you'd be playing somebody at Dundee United that's got 200 first-team appearances, mm-hmm. but he's just coming back from an injury, and you're a 15-year-old getting flung in to play against him. So who was in the Rangers reserves at the time?
That was the usual. Was Shuggie Burns, there was the Fleckies, the Dave McFarlands, there was guys like Bobby Russell, even David Cooper, Derek Johnson coming back to finish. I'm in playing with them. But you're talking about playing against the opposition. So that dribbling with the ball and scoring goals didn't happen. Because I knew, but if I was dribbling with the ball, one thing I was getting put up in there, 6 feet in there. So I had to release the ball a wee bit quicker, and then I became a different player. You know, it was pass, move. And do it early, because if it didn't, you get smashed for the opposition, but also you get shirked. You would get a bit of abuse. So that's what I'm saying. You had to have thick skin. You had to be able to deal with that. But also, if you didn't deal with that, you either sink or you swim. And some boys will crumble. But that's probably the difference back in that day and age, was I had to learn, I had to accept that, go on with it, take the criticism and kick on again. Far too often what you see is people are young players, when they get a bit of criticism, when they get shirked for a fellow pro, they kind of crumble a wee bit. So it was difficult at times, to be honest with you, but an absolute buzz, because I'm playing with guys that I'm sitting in the centenary stand support, singing the songs, and then I'm playing with them. So surreal, man. Mad.
Incredible.
John McDonald, no, right? We saw him. Just trying the names. They'll all come back. Kenny Black, you know, right? Kenny Lyle, Ian Ferguson. Just trying to Billy Davis, what a player wee Billy was. He was a captain in the reserves. He was top drawer. I love wee Billy Davis. All the guys, you know, in the mix with him.
And you're the youngest by a good bit, I imagine.
Aye, you know, and it was an absolute buzz.
So what position were they playing you at the time, Derek?
At times in the middle of the park, but sometimes wide in the right. So it was kind of wide right in a midfield role. So, but it was a real learning curve. So it was in terms of, because I love to dribble with the ball. I love to do the wee flicks and the wee tricks and that, because I enjoyed that. Because the reason I'm saying I like to dribble, because my heroes, you well know, is Coop, David Cooper. I love watching David Cooper. I love watching Bobby Russell, you know, and I wanted to be them. So the next thing, I'm playing in the same team as them at times, you know, when they were coming back from injury. So
what's it like? You're 15, right? You're getting kit it up. You're playing the reserves, you're playing against whoever, and you're expecting it to be one of the proper reserve players and some youngins, and you find out David Cooper's playing today, and you're getting to take the pitch with David Cooper.
Do you know something? I wonder, she think about it, I wonder what they thought of me coming in at that age, because they must have been going like, who's this? This wee guy.
The boy's delivering the papers.
Isn't it? But they must have been going like that. And, you know, the one thing... I will say, listen, I enjoy it. I love a laugh and all that. But the one thing I did have for them was utter respect. Yeah. You know, so if they asked me to do something, I would do it. No problem. But I also sometimes think, what did they think of me? Right. You know, they must have been like that. Oh, lucky wee sod getting it. Now, because they might have had to, I don't know their story. They might have got that opportunity at 17, 18, 19, whatever. And there's a wee young 15-year-old coming in with an opportunity, you know, to play.
And were you playing regular for the reserves? It wasn't as if it was once a month. Were you
no,
on the
I was
team
kinda, and we were winning reserve league titles and that. Because that's what I'm saying. The players have just telling you about their, you know, they were all great good team. Players. And the one thing is, all the guys, we're all winners. So, and that's the other thing. You can't have an okay game. You can't just scrape through and win. You need to win, but you need to win with a wee bit of style and do it well.
And I was at the game for Si's testimonial. Mm-hmm. With all due respect, I was 10. Right. I can remember that the game. I remember my dad saying, see that wee guy there? He's still at the school, right? How did that come about, you making your debut in that just, testimonial? That must have been amazing, getting that news.
Just getting in to help out. I was asked by John Gregg to go in, help out with the kit, help the players. They need their boots cleaned, the studs changed. They need a cup of tea, paper, whatever they need. I was just to get in and get it, make sure everything was all right. And then the next thing Greggy said to us, he went like that, he says, listen, I'm going to give you a strip the day you wear it, you'll sit on the bench. You can, in fact, you can go in and do a wee warm-up at half-time and that, even before the game. Are you up for that? And I was like, up for it? Of course, aye. So the next thing, so I'm sitting and I'm out warming up, and it was Swansea we played. Big Tam played the first 5 minutes, then he come back to the bench, sat down the bench, having the fag, puffing away. I'm looking down, going, like, is that what they do? You know what I mean? Like, I don't need to start getting on the fag. You know what I mean? So, and I'm sitting there. So, without even thinking, so half-time comes and goes into second half, and I'm buzzing. I'm loving it. You know, I'm sitting there, and like, my dad doesn't even know. He just thinks he's going to pick me up after the game, come and get me an hour after the game. So, my dad's come to pick me up. So, next thing, Big Tam, he just looks across and he says, do you fancy going on here?
No.
And I'm looking at him, I'm going like that. I just nod to him, went that. He went, right, get yourself warmed up, you're going on. Tam for size call. So I go on, says testimonial. You can do what you want. And Tam came on the last 5 minutes. I think he scored. I think they let him through and score. But what a buzz, you know what I mean? I keep using that word buzz. But it was crazy.
My memory as a 10-year-old is always different. You always think every game's full house and all that, and it wasn't. But it was a fair crowd that day. It must have been a good crowd because older people want to say thanks and well done to Tam for Sam.
30,000, I would imagine. 25,000, 30,000. It was crazy. And it was, I used to go to the games. It was Big Willie Houston, boy for a little learner. It was Pally with him and a few other boys. And he'd have been sitting in there and he'd be going like that.
See,
there are wee bastards getting on. Like that. You know what I mean? But the one thing I never done when I played football, I never looked into a crowd. I never looked, even later on, didn't they look for family, didn't they look for pals. Once I crossed that white line, I'm in the zone. So, but I could imagine a few of them, even some of the guys my pals from Erlock High School, they might have been sitting in the stand that day and going like that. Christ,
that's Derek.
That's me, Derek. That's me, Derek. Getting on with she then. You know what I mean? So, that was magic.
Some buzz. And then that would have been the summer, obviously, we've been testimonials from memory, wasn't it? See, around about that time, for size, sure, Jardine and Colin Jackson, you had testimonials within like 3 or 4 years. It seemed to be a thing.
And deservedly so.
Aye.
Hey, guys. Absolute legends, icons of the game, the Rangers Football Club. So, I miss kind of Sandy Jardine. I think he just left at that time. I think he was playing with Hearts, Big Bomber as well, Big Colin Jackson. But and it's a thing that doesn't seem to happen that often because of the money in the game, because people move so much. Aye. But
like Sir McGregor, I mean, testimonial, and it's no disrespect whatsoever. I was at his testimonial dinner, and they're just sitting there going, what a career that boy's had. But his testimonial time is split over two sessions, you know. Aye. Don't get me wrong, if it wasn't for what happened in 2012, he might never have left. But for any player to be at any club nowadays for 10, 12 years as a first team regular is going to take some doing.
And they should be rewarded. I'm saying rewarded financially, but even be acknowledged. And have they do it, because it's great for his teammates all come together and celebrate what he's achieved, because McGregor was absolutely top notch, wasn't he?
Aye, no bad calling.
Aye.
So that happens, you're 15, you dipped your toe in a wee bit and thought this is all right. How did you play?
Do you know, I can't even remember. Just, and it's the excitement. There is a wee bit of nerves. It's no right of me to say that I wasn't any nerves. Of course, there's a wee bit of nerves, but just more excited. Just want to go in the ball. And again, just want to show what you can do. Don't dribble too much.
Pass it to Coops.
Well, there you go. Do you know something? And that's the way I sometimes thought of football. It's a simple game, isn't it? Just if you could get a good touch, receive the ball, a good touch, and you get to players that can make a difference. the Davy Coopers. And in my time, when I was playing with the likes of Geranti, Mark Walters, Ali McCoy, get to the guys. They did the hard thing. They put it in the back of the net. I did the easy thing. I just take a touch, get to them. Happy days. Simple, isn't it?
It's not difficult.
No.
Rightly or wrongly, I tell kids, there's three things you can do. See, once you get that ball under control, there's only three things you can do.
Mm.
You can either shoot, pass, or dribble. Well, that's it.
Decision making.
You do it in that order. See if you can shoot, shoot. Nobody will ever get any trouble in our club for shooting. Mm-hmm. Right? Second thing should be pass it. Because if there's somebody in a better position, they might be able to get a shot off.
Yeah.
And then the last thing you do is move.
Mm-hmm.
Dribble with the ball.
Pass, move, aye.
You know, so
pass
just
and
shoot,
move.
Pass
that,
and move.
That was a good pass and move. But the thing is, get to, and you recognise, even when you play, you're in a game, and you know, say like Mark Walters, you always want to isolate Mark Walters 1v1. So if I could do that in a game, you know he's there. You know he's just, the fullback's starting to creep in. And then you just check out, get to Mark as early as you can, gives him that opportunity. Get to the fullback, get past him, creates an opportunity. Geranti, you know, magnificent, like timing, runs and all that. If you can get that weight of pass into him, boom, he's through, scores goal. McCoyst, he was clever, so he was as well. All the guys, you know, so it's about giving them the ball in certain areas where they can do the damage.
I'd just like to take a minute to talk to you about NordVPN, which is a company that I use their services. I use it majority of the time when I'm travelling abroad, when I want to keep up to date with the programs I'm watching at the time, or more importantly to me, the sports that I want to watch when I'm abroad. So it doesn't matter where I am in the world, I can still watch the channels and the games and the sports that I want to. It also gives me security and some privacy that I'm looking for when I'm browsing the internet. They've got an exclusive huge discount available to viewers of the podcast, and they'll give you an additional 4 months free and top of whichever package you go on if you use our code. To get that, plus a 30-day, no quibble, money-back guarantee, all you need to do is log on to nordvpn.com/Craig, C-R-A-I-G, and that'll get you the exclusive discount plus the 4 months free on top of whichever package you go for. So go and give them a look, guys, and certainly I've had no problem using them the times I'm travelling abroad, so I mostly use them. Thank you very much. That boy mentioned Durant, was he a decent football player?
He was no bad, by the way. When I came across Durant when I was 16, when he came into the club, I was to show him the ropes, to take him around and just make sure he was all right. And we had to off right away. So we had just 2 wee Glasgow guys having the time of our life. Going to be playing for Glasgow Rangers. Going out with each other on a Saturday night, sometimes a Sunday. That'd be a Monday, you know.
Tuesday.
Aye, but I would say it like Wednesday. We had an absolute ball. We were having the time of our life, you know. And Durant.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com /WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
It was you've met him numerous times yourself. He's a life and soul of the party. We had some great times because we were never out of each other's company. You know, if it wasn't at football, if it wasn't good at the weekends, holidaying together. We went holidays together and all that, the full shebang. It was an absolute, it was magic. So it was, what a time.
What's the age difference between you and Danny?
Just under a year, Janet. Right. He's a wee bit older than me. But he was a kinder, I wouldn't say late developer, but he never comes through the system. You know, the S form. Durante obviously come in there. It was probably on trial. It was a 15, 16-year-old. And right away, I mean, you could see the class. And he was different. He was different in terms of the way he played. There wasn't as many midfielders that had that intelligence and made the runs that he did. It wasn't just like running, because he was some athlete. You need to think about the runs. You need to time the runs. And he was really clever at seeing the build-up. As a play build-up, then boom, he would take off. And then that's when you could maybe find him with a pass at it. He would read it. So he was very clever as well. Clever in the football sense. The twos were two dafties.
Never get many O-levels.
Well, by the way, that's short. There's another thing, and you should, because see, at school, I look back, I think Ian was maybe the same. I kind of left school. This is terrible, what I'm going to say, and I wouldn't advise any parents or to let their kids do this. So that's, I'd be telling after my man, Dad, because seeing second year, I wasn't interested in school. I was only interested in two things. Believe it or not, it was English. I liked English, and I liked PE. Yeah. Because I had to go to school to play school football. I dogged it quite a lot, and I went up. There was a nature trail in Little Lernock. The guys that will come from there or not, so we but in some great areas and that. I used to go up and train. So I did myself. I think maybe not so much my ma, but I'm sure my dad knew I wasn't at school at times.
Turned a blind eye, yeah.
Aye. And I think he knew what I was doing. And because that's what I wanted to do. You know, my dad's a roof sheeter. So is my uncles and that as well. I didn't want to be a roof sheeter. I wanted to be a football player. And I was going to get everything. So no levels, which and looking back, I come down in my boys like a ton of bricks. That was never going to happen. So they're actually quite brainy compared to me. So, and I think Ian was a bit the same, because we just wanted to be it was our dream, it's everything. And I think Durante might have been a scaffolder. It's funny, right? I'm talking about roof sheeting. He might have been a scaffolder. I think that's what the other kind of occupation he was going to get into. So he gave it everything, but we had to be lucky as well. So you need all the wee bits to fall into place. So if anybody listens into this, don't let your kids do that. Let your schoolwork, it's no levels now. What is it they have now? Is it
at fives? I think so. It's like
I'm lost.
Do you know? So, it's funny.
Get a good education.
Just this morning I had a phone call for a parent at our club, and the boy plays for our under-16s and he's in trial with a professional club just now. And his mum was having the conversation about the amount of time that he's dedicating to football and the stress he's at, causes. And he's coming up to do his prelims are starting this month or next month.
Right.
And she said, so what's the club's view on him when his studies are going on? I says, I'm not making that decision. That's not my place. What I will say is, you've got to just make that decision. And whatever decision you make, if you say to me this kid's not coming to training for 3 weeks because he's got to study or he can't play this game, I'll support that. Whatever you decide as a parent. And I thought, you know, that was good that she's having that conversation. You know, the boy is a talented player, a late developer, but a talented player. He's got a wee chance. Mm-hmm. And if he can get into this club at under 16 and, you know, play 2 or 3 years of good football, he could end up getting paid at the end there. He might know.
But, and that's the big but. So you need to have something behind you to fall back on, and that's that education and getting all your qualifications. It's so important. So I just look back at that and I think, God, what was I even thinking? But I felt I was so driven. I just wanted that, you know, and it was so desperate just to become a football player. And that's because I was an S form, So I knew that this coming up to 15, 16 was coming up quickly. So I wasn't going to school. I was going training.
Again, I wouldn't endorse what I'm about to say, just like you were with some of your comments earlier. But see, if you didn't have that, see, if you had something to fall back on, would that have made you driven? Maybe that having just the one goal, the one maybe helped your mentality, your drive, your enthusiasm, your determination, that you're going, I ain't going to be up a ladder.
That's a good question. I never even gave that. I mean, at that, when you're 13, 14, you don't even think that. You've got to watch Rangers, you're watching the games on the telly, and you want to be that. You want to have that lifestyle. You want to be out there. And I was a dreamer as well. I used to kind of dream. I'd love to be like him. I'd love to do that. And that's how I was talking about Coopin and all that and Bobby Russell. But I don't know. I didn't have the brains,
You weren't going to be a doctor.
No, I certainly wasn't going to be a doctor. And I certainly didn't want to be a roof sheeter. No, not roof sheeters. Mm-hmm. Because my dad was... built Ibrox himself. And my dad was, when I was at Rangers, my dad was working on, he'd done all the sheeting. So sometimes I'd put a wee loosener and that with other boys, and my dad's up there hanging.
See everybody in the district ballots over 60 built Ibrox.
Brilliant.
Every one of them, when you read, I think there was something happened where they were putting the seats in or something. They were needing some labour. The pub just
did.
So one of them said, I bought Ibrox, you know.
Class.
Your dad actually did.
Oh, that's magic.
So you and Durante, you're in a couple of it. See, another thing I'm just thinking of, see, when you made your debut then, were you still an S form or were you apprentice at the time? You certainly wouldn't have been a professional because you couldn't sign as a pro for another year anyway. But what was the situation? Were you still S form?
I'm still S form. But then that kind of gave me the inkling that I was going to get a contract. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I didn't go to school. That was the be all and end all. Getting your first professional contract, and that gives you your opportunity to show what you're all about. I think my first contract was a 2-year contract, something like that. I'm not too sure. I can't remember. But
probably never read it.
I didn't. It was because you just want that pen and you just want to sign in the dotted line. You just want to be a professional. And then that's you. You're getting into Ibrox every morning. You know.
So when did you make your first competitive debut?
That would have been doing it Queen of the South. I think that was a cup game. I knew that was, I was 16 at that time. There's one game as well comes into my mind. It's Hearts. I think it was Hearts at Ibrox. I think that was the home debut. But I never played the middle part. I was playing wide right. I couldn't get in the middle part. There was, you know what I mean, some top players in there, the Russells, the Pritts and all that, guys like that, you know. So even just to be in that kind of starting lineup. So I think it was doing it Queen of the South. There's a lot of, when I think back as well, there's a lot of the stuff I don't remember. I just remember kind of the cup finals and that, and the parties and that, you know. So, but a lot of the, and there's just certain, I tell you what I remember as well, just like the travelling back and forward for Hamilton. To Ibrox, not David Cooper.
Who was your captain?
Ian Ferguson. There was Ian Ferguson at times. There was Nicky Walker. I think Shuggy as well. Shuggy was staying in Lark Hall. So you would be in that. I loved a Thursday because a Thursday we'd go back to Hamilton and the guys would go into a wee place called The Muse, get a wee bite to eat. They got a couple of shandies, nothing daft. There's a wee piano bar. Coop would go in and a few of the boys put a Coopin on. I would just be sitting there and in their company just for a week and an hour or two, you know, just sitting, no saying it, no really involved in the conversation because they're obviously a bit older than me, but just sitting there, you know, and being with them. That was crazy.
You know, I've been very, very lucky over the last 10 years. I met folk like yourself, folk I just grew up idolising. Alan McCoy's walked by me in the street, he'll say hello, just mad stuff and you pinch yourself, right? But the one person that I never ever got to meet in my life was David Cooper. And that just would have been the best. I mean,
the one thing about Coop I loved about David Cooper, know that he was a brilliant player. He had time for you. I've mentioned when I go in the day some of the kind of wee dinners and all that, the Rangers clubs and whatever, and you're at, if it's a Q&A or whatever, that's the one thing. It's probably the one thing I think back and I go, David Cooper gave me time. And I mean, no time just on the training part, but away from that. He was brilliant in the dressing room. He was brilliant with us, sure, the young guys. I think he liked a wee bit of carry on. So he was the moody blue in front of the media. He didn't want to talk to him. He didn't have any time with him. Time for them. But for us, younger guy, he'd be cheeky, I know. You know, he could be, and he was funny at times. But he gave you that wee bit of time, that wee bit of advice, put you at ease, just to a couple of wee words, a wee arm on the shoulder, a wee laugh, a wee joke. Well, sometimes players have not got that for you. And that's the one thing. And I put guys like Ray Wilkins like that. I've mentioned Ray all the time. A guy that was an absolute class act, player, world-class football player. The one thing he had was time, you know. And that's something that you don't get for certain players.
I remember reading something on social media when he passed away. And it was a guy who was begging in the street. And Ray Wilkins went to walk past him. And he went up and started talking to him. Mm-hmm. Within half an hour, they were sitting in a coffee shop blathering like two pals.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, when Ray Wilkins died, like, you know, Cooper died, you've got a million people writing, you know, their memories of them. And I'd read loads and loads of them. But to see this one guy, I thought, geez, well, that tells you more about that man than any international cap he got, any trophy, any AC Milan's he played for. He's just an absolute gentleman.
Aye. And that is the difference with these guys. Some of the guys in the dressing room were a wee bit different sometimes because if it was me, if it was Durante, maybe Dave McFarlane, kind of cheeky chappies. Some of the guys a wee dink, you know, a wee slap, which is quite right, you know, because we were cheeky wee bisms at times. But I think Coop enjoyed that, and he liked to get my heady foot as well in the tunnel. But just that time, just sitting with you, talking with you, yapping away, you know, and you're saying you're going like, Alan McCoy's pinch yourself. This is a guy that I grew up idolising, want to be like him. Wearing his... I remember one of the first, when I was in helping out with the gear, he chucked his... the thing kept his soaks up, the tie-ups and all that, and he chucked it away. And I grabbed it, right? And I wore it. I wore it for about 2 years. I'm going to take it off because it was David Cooper's night. I don't know if he knew that, David Cooper. But what happened was I got into... It was Bob, the physio at the time. And when I was in getting rubs and that, he was kept saying to me, you need to take that off. I said, it's not coming off. I think we get into a wee skirmish about that. He was going to cut it off and I went off my nut. So I did. I know it's just wee things like that will come back, wee memories. Uh-huh. But no, these guys are class act. So they are.
So when you start getting into the team, and very regularly, to be fair, at 16 and 17, wasn't he like some people nowadays, they might get 3 games out of a season. You were in more than you were out when you got in. How did the other, you're lining up, whistle goes, and you're looking at who's going to be marking you. How did they react to you?
Again, it's the only way I can understand that now is when I get a bit older and I was coming up against a young player, I began, I need to be at it today because this is a young, eager, energetic player. He's going to want to impress, so he's going to be going here, there, and everywhere, and you've got to match that. So that I could imagine that's what the opposition players would maybe be looking at me going, well, he's going to want to impress, he's going to have that energy, I'm going to go and need to give him a wee slap or two, and at times, but I get looked after as well, you know, in some of the Rangers teams that I played with, you know. So if I was getting a bit of a rough time, there were guys that would stand in.
Enforcers. So see through this early part of your career, is there anybody that stands out that was a right bugger to you that just took liberties?
Opposition. Mm-hmm. There was one, a boy, I remember, he should have broke my leg. I don't know, it was a boy of Billy Abercrombie. It was a tough player, St Mirren. Aye. Oh, he was a good player, Billy Abercrombie, but he was a tough player, dirty player. And again, being young, a wee bit naive, you know, and you're into tackles, 50-50s, you know. Sometimes you just got to get your foot up a wee bit higher than the opposition player. And wasn't he as experienced as any guys? And I remember he'd done me a couple of times. So, but for that tackle, so he'd done me a favour, actually. Well, by the way, I was lying in a heap, crumpled. I thought I'd broke my leg. I get carried off. I was doing it at Love Street. I learned that day that I maybe just hang back a wee bit, get my foot a wee bit higher, and maybe give him a wee ding as well. So aye. So that's it. It's a learning curve, isn't it? So that's what it's so that's all part of that.
And see the opposition you're playing against. Was been any of them actually quite good with you in the part and supportive and talking you through games?
Craig, I've said this numerous times, and it'll go with the respect with the Rangers Celtic. Right, there is a lot of hatred there, a lot of dislike on that. But more often than not, between the players, there's a respect. And the one with Tommy Burns when I made my debut in an Old Firm game at Parkhead, Tommy, I was playing up against Tommy. And I thought he was at the wind-up because after 5-10 minutes of the game, he starts praising me. He's like, "You're doing well, wee man." He says, "Keep it going." He's like, "Keep that touch and play, keep moving." I'm like, "He's at it." He's winding me up, and he kept going and going like, "Good stuff." So I'm going like this, because I was going, "Shouldn't he be like us? Where's all this hatred? I've heard none of that." And I was kind of, I had this vibe that, because that was my first Celtic getting now again, yeah, against Celtic in that environment, and I thought it was going to be pure hatred. Exact opposite. So this keeps going on, and he's like, even at going off at half time, he says, "That was good stuff, by the way. Good stuff. You're doing magic and all that." I'm going off, and I'm sitting there at half time. So I goes on another 20 minutes into second half before I get took off, get subbed. I was knackered. And it's not just the physical element, it's everything that goes with it, you know, the nervousness you have in it and the excitement and that. And just as walking off again, he's a wee part, and he's like, "Hey, excellent, son." But I went and I couldn't believe it, you know, and I was like, strange. And when I got into the first Scotland squad, it was doing it, Trun, and I walked into this room, and again, I was nervous, you know, walking into a room full of these Scottish internationalists. And Tommy was the first one. He got up off the for the table, up off his chair, come over and introduced me to all the guys. And I was so there. That was kind of surreal. That so it was.
I bet it was.
Because sometimes when I was working in the schools, show racism, a red card. I used to tell that story because when I went outside to meet my dad, I was taking the same. My dad, the first thing my dad was like, "How was it?" I was like, "Amazing, unbelievable." I says, "Oh, the pace and the quarters." I says, "But that," he was like, "What is it?" He says, "Why is it?" I says, "Tommy Burns." And he went, "What about Tommy Burns?" Right? What can I? He says, "What about Tommy Burns? What was he?" I says, "No, that." He says, "He was brilliant with me." I says, "He was actually encouraging me, praising me." He's like, "Ah, you're kidding me on." And for that day onwards, my dad, the respect for Tommy Burns.
See, when I'd came across him as a youth, mm-hmm, a few times, and again, I'm like, "Ah, can you believe this guy's been nice to me, right?"
Gentleman.
But see, when you look at his funeral photograph, and you see Walter Smith, and you see Alan McCoist, and you see who was in the Scotland background staff room, like, mm-hmm, that's it. You don't need to ask yourself why. It's obvious why. That he was just a genuinely nice guy. But do you know one of the weird things? I watched him training one day, right? He's come off the park. I went, "Excuse me, Mr. Burns. Why did you get a puma boot in one shoe and this one in the other?" And he had a Puma King, I think, in his left foot. And he says, "I like the touch of that one, but I prefer the grip with the Adidas," right? And I remember, I says, "But what do you do when you go to a game?" He says, "I need to wear Adidas, so I paint my Puma black and the Tippex to put stripes on it." And I was telling us, "Like, pal, I mean this." Right. And he's like, "No way." And I searched the internet, right, I couldn't find, near enough every photograph was for the knees up, right? The guy's looking at me as a funeral line, right? And I went, "No, but then, boy, John Hillcoat was a goalkeeper, me and him went to school together, he was a couple of years above me in school, and he was ground staff at St. Mirren as a boy, mm-hmm, and same, they've turned up, they've been like, "Right, that's right, he's already got to need us for the Scottish Cup final,"
right?
And I can't remember the old pros he was looking after at the time, but he got two pair to get, mm-hmm, their Pumas, black and out, and Tippex out, and they played in the Scottish Cup final with Pumas on. But Adidas had flung all these boots in the wrong, "Oh, I need to wear Adidas are giving us all this support." And he had, his job was the ground staff was to black out the Pumas sign and put fucking Tippex on them, and away they went. Nice guy, Tommy Burns. And
do you know something? Just a guy that was very religious, mm-hmm, well, I am though, but loved his club, which I do. I love my club, so And he respected that, and vice versa. And I think that's because you talk about the Rangers and the Celtic thing as well. There's guys like, and I have Paul McStay as well. When I finished playing, I worked for a short period of time with Paul as well, getting into the schools, try to show the kids that, listen, hey, you want to win and you want the best for your club. But sometimes there's a line you can't cross. And sometimes we have crossed it, you know, and we make mistakes. But, you know, if you can get it back to, listen, it's at the end of the day, you know, you can still be pals as well. You can still have that relationship. And I've had that. Same with your auntie, and we'll go back, because we've, at times when we were out in Glasgow, we would be in certain people's company. You know what I mean? Some of the Celtic boys. And you get funny looks, right enough. But that's just the way it is. We want to kick lumps out of them, of course. They want to do the same to us. They want to win, we want to win. We want to do it, we want to do it for the supporters. That's what it's all about. But there can be times, and I'm not saying I'm a saint. There's sometimes I have crossed the line, like a lot of people. But there is, underlying, the respect is there.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I mean, what I try to say to some of the kids is, there is nothing wrong with loving your club and your team. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean you need to hate anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you go into a partner playing against them and it steps your game up 10%, mm-hmm. but see the end of the game, shake his hands.
Aye.
And I remember, I was about 18, I was playing for a team down in Port Glasgow, Scottish Cup final. We had a game in the morning. Flies running on that mental to try and get back up the road to go to Hampden. I can't remember what year it was. Well, plain name, it might have been a League Cup final, I can't just remember. And my ticket was for the North Enclosure, and I was the last turnstile of the Rangers fans. So we're walking that way, there's a big fence and hundreds of coppers, and they're all walking that way. And I don't need to tell you the choice words are getting flung about, right? And I'm getting it as good as I can. I'm getting back, right? And I get to the fence and I've looked, there's a boy about that apart. It was a goalkeeper for Port that I played with that day. And I'm getting at him stinking, and the two just looked and stopped and busted. We're only two laughing, know. Everybody else hated
it's mad, isn't it? That is a bit mad mental.
I think it's society. I think to take that away from the Rangers and Celtic game would take a lot of what is the spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can, the final whistle goes and you can go up the road and no one to shoot somebody or stick a knife in somebody, then I think it's acceptable.
Aye.
But people have got to learn that it's no 24/7. It doesn't need to be.
I like when the banter is there, when they're winding you up, but it's done with humour as well. Because you've got to laugh at yourself sometimes. Sometimes that's as a football player. You're going to, I said earlier, the criticism, somebody's going to shout things at you. Sometimes you just go to laugh. And you go and, if you take a wee step back and go, by the way, he's right, that's quite funny. Do you know what I mean? So you've got, sometimes you just go to, like, but that's, you just say it, you don't want to go and shoot, hurt somebody, but there's nothing better than beating them, isn't there, no?
And then that's about loving your team.
Aye, I know. And then you can go and celebrate and part in, and you know that they're sitting in the house or in a darkened room.
Aye.
And that's the whole beauty of it, isn't it? That's the whole beauty.
I was born in Linwood, and I moved when I was about second year in school up to Bridge of Weir. And the pub in Bridge of Weir, in the middle of Bridge of Weir, had a lounge and a bar, and the Rangers bus left for one, the Celtic bus left for the other.
Right.
It was an old firm. It was all right, because he'd be a waste. See, they're playing away in Aberdeen. You're in the morning. You were in at lunchtime, and you would hardly cross each other coming back. But all firm games, obviously, leaving at the same time, coming back at the same time, right? And there was an unwritten rule. Nobody ever said, this is what we're going to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
See, if we won, they'd get half a bus straight up the road.
There you go.
See, if we beat half a bus straight up the road. See, if it was a draw, what a party.
I think that's what it's all about, that you can... And the good thing is knowing that we used to do it. We used to go and celebrate, you know. But you knew the punters were celebrating as well, wherever they were. They were going back to their wee village or whatever. They were going back to their house or their party. I just love the fact that you could have a good time, enjoy it, party, and you've got one earning them. It's nothing better. It's a great feeling, isn't it?
What's your best ever Old Firm game?
Probably the one we won 2-1 at Hampden, the first League Cup. There's other one, because there's one and we never won. It was a 2-2 game. We were 2-0 done. We're down to 10 men. I think it was a Goffey scores last gasp winner. That felt amazing. So it did.
Is that one he almost miskicked it? Aye. It was a weird one at the back post, wasn't it?
I think Geraghty plays a 1-2 away out on the right-hand side. And again, he's getting the right to get the ball back in, but he does somehow. And we're down, I think we were down to 9 men. Then, anyway, like that, and I can remember that felt what I win. But probably the first League Cup, we won 2-1. Coop scores the winner. It's my first medal, my first League Cup medal. So, and again, everything that went with it. After the game, the celebrations, magic, back to Ibrox, the celebrations, with all the guys that worked in there. And then you go, like, she's passed the wee tiny Irene, or the girls, Nora, or the guys at Dara, or the hard graft. When you go back to Ibrox and you can sit, have a drink and party with them, and they're the best laughs. Right?
So what age are you at this time, at the cup final?
Is it 18? 18, I think it was 18, 19, But the thing is, you go, oh, this is great. This is what it's all going to. It's always going to be like this. And then you find out it's no. So maybe that's what I was guilty of, was enjoying the moment. But then when I think back, I don't regret that, because I've shared some kind of great moments, and had some great times with the guys. So, but the 7 years I was there, I made the mess there, you know. But discipline could have been better at times. Of course, I picked up far too many injuries, of course, that frustrated Graham, and quite rightly so, I can see it from his side. But I just go, the 7 years that I had, absolutely, I loved it.
Ask a little favour. I really appreciate the hours some of you are investing into the channel, simply watching the videos. But to help the channel grow, what I would love for you to do is hit the subscribe button if you enjoy the channel. And if there's any particular podcast you enjoy, please hit the thumbs up for like button. It will do massive things for the channel if we can do that. And thank you very much for your continued support and feedback.